Welcome to Emotional Sobriety, the next step in recovery with Dr. Alan Berger and Tom Rutledge.
There's Mr. Rutledge.
Sorry I'm late.
That's okay.
Better be, God damn it.
I'm groveling, sorry.
You don't grovel well.
No, well, I can tell you sometimes I've groveled.
Oh, I have too. There's been a few times in my life. You have to refine the art of groveling to stay married.
Yeah, there's our next book right there.
That's a great.
There's our zillion-dollar seller.
The art of groveling.
Refining the art of groveling. The key to a successful marriage.
it will be a great gift book that women will give their husbands.
It's we'll buy them by the cases. I'm looking forward to to getting back into writing, man. I've had such a difficult time with this sleep, man. I'm so fucked up.
Bless your heart. I'm so sorry. Is it pain related?
Yeah, it's pain related most of the time. It's just that this peripheral neuropathy, and unfortunately it's a progressive disease, and the medication that works fucks me up really bad in other areas. It takes away the pain, but then I lose control of my emotions. And my memory starts to get messed up. I can't remember.
Oh, fuck.
So crazy, man. It was so fucking nuts.
Well, I don't like that Alan's in this situation. I guess I'm my volume's up because I'm yelling at it.
Hi, Melanie.
Glad to be here, late.
It's a way to do it. Yeah.
Welcome. We're here with Alan, Tom, and Melanie Gould from the Divided Sky Residential Recovery. Alan's been collaborating with her recently. I think you came out to Vermont and did a talk.
Every time I go there, I'm so excited because I think some incredible things are happening at Divided Sky.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very unique program, and I'm really glad to have Melanie on today to talk about it because it's really one of a kind. There's no other program like it in the United States.
Yeah.
It's unique. In terms of what kind of an atmosphere and message is being given to someone, is we are welcoming you into our space.
And what we've said amongst the staff is, this isn't our place. This is their place. Like, we come and go. The guests mm-hmm. are here. They live here. They sleep here. We're the ones who are, you know, coming and going and taking care of them. So,
right.
Our original right. plan, when you know, I first started understanding what emotional sobriety is, and implementing it in my own life, I noticed, go figure, my life started to get better, and I became happier and less concerned with all of the other stuff, all of the noise, all of the outside stuff. So when the idea came up to do a program, I will say, with my dear friend, Trey Anastasio, the first thought was, we're going to do a medical model. And by, you know, the twists and turns of the universe and the world, we couldn't do that. So what could we do? We bought this beautiful building in Ludlow, Vermont. How could we continue to open and operate to help people recover? And it came down to backing way out of our original plan and really looking at what are the things that helped us get sober? Meaning myself and Trey, the people we know, the foundation is always 12-step for those of us who practice that and who want abstinence-based recovery. I found Alan's work when I was working as a drug court coordinator in New York. I started with the 12 stupid things to mess up your recovery, and I would give all of that information to the drug court participants in their early, early days. Because that's really what it is. It's relapse prevention. And then about 2011 is when 12 Smart Things came out. And that was my, you know, aha moment for myself on a personal level, really recognizing that I was the problem. And I've said that before when I was reading this book. I kind of had this epiphany that me being in the place I was in my life, which wasn't so great, I was in charge of whether I was miserable or not. I was the problem, but I was also the solution. And that was the thing that really opened my eyes up to, we have more power and control of our own lives than we realize. So time went on. I would use that with the drug court participants. And then the pandemic hit right before that, pretty much like late 2019, we started talking about doing a program. And it was always in the back of my mind that we will implement emotional sobriety throughout this program. But it got even easier when we decided to operate as a retreat, because we don't have requirements that we have to follow like a treatment center does. We don't have that outline that says you have to follow these steps, you have to offer these things. So again, we foundation is 12 step, and we brought into it 12 essential insights as a book reading. So we have a group that just reads through the whole book. I was going to say just, but that minimizes the importance of it. That reads through the whole book. The group discussions that come from that are really incredible and amazing. And we also, you know, will use the step videos that you guys did during the pandemic to kind of tie it all together if people aren't totally sure, or if they don't have 12-step background. And what we found is that's the thing that people say the most has been missing from their previous attempts at recovery. They'll say, you know, I did all of this stuff, but I never got out of my own head, or I was never able to overcome the resentments, or I was always blaming everyone else in my life for my problems instead of recognizing that I was the one creating them. So we've been open. It'll be 2 years in November, which is really exciting. And to back up, I had written Alan a letter when I was still working for the court system, just outlining the work that I was doing with the participants and that they really enjoyed it. And he came to visit the center before we even opened. I think we were mid-construction.
You're in construction. You're just starting.
Yeah. It was probably torn apart and a mess. And really just wanted him to see the vision that we had and how grateful we were that he, you know, put his work into writings that we could follow and learn from. And so what I tell people is we don't treat people here. We're not a treatment center. We empower them and they figure out, oh, okay.
Love it. Yeah.
So it's 12 step. It's emotional sobriety. It's mindfulness oriented recovery enhancement, which is a mindfulness practice that we teach to AA meetings, NA meetings. We also have a ACA meeting that's really, it's a powerful meeting, and a lot of our guests have never been exposed to that. And that's another eye opener and another aha moment.
Yeah, you got to really strap in for those ACA meetings.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should probably go to one. I need to go to a lot of different fellowships probably these days. But I was going to ask for you guys to expand a little bit on the opportunity in Nobody Else Is Coming, because I think that some people hear that and they're in recovery and they're trying to find a new framework for life. And they see it as like a self-blaming kind of punitive doors shutting, you know, doors slamming down manner of understanding, re-understanding the world. But you know, as I've come to understand it over time, you know, talking to Alan, Tom, and learning more about emotional sobriety, what it really is like, yeah, it's empowering. So
yeah.
What's your experience been, or like, has there been any, has it been a struggle sometimes to like, to teach that, or to, you know, what are the hurdles to imparting that in people recovering?
Well, the good thing is they're here for at least 30 days. So when people come in the door, within a day or two, as a new guest, we do what we call emotional sobriety 101, which basically condenses into about an hour and a half, a group, you know, it could be one people, could be three people, that covers, it hits all the core concepts of emotional sobriety so that they're not like thrown into a group going, what are you talking about? What is differentiation? I have no idea what you're saying. When you say no one is coming, I don't know what that means. When we talk about no one is coming, we always follow it with, you're the one you've been waiting for.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what, again, what I learned, what helped me to thrive and not just, you know, continue to be miserable in my life.
Well, and Patrick, I love the way you said it just then, because that, you know, that does become, I mean, first of all, it's a good thing to say, because first, sometimes we say things because they get people's attention. It's like, and that's definitely one of those things. It's like, and even the thing that you said earlier was I'm, you know, it's up to me whether I'm miserable or not. This is a big deal that for people to get a hold of. And it's a key to the whole emotional sobriety thing. And it feels insulting as we find our attachment to victimization. And so what I was going to say too, before I forget it, Patrick, I love what you said. I think I'm going to change how I say it. You said no one else is coming. It's like, because that really implies everybody's here.
Yeah.
Everybody we need's already right. here. Nobody. We don't. Yeah. We don't need anybody else.
If we think about the flow of this conversation, you know, one of the things you said that I really want to highlight is that you are not in the business of treating people. You're in the business of empowering people.
Yeah.
So yeah. The focus is not on pathology. The focus is on people, and it's being on health, right? On helping people become what they can be.
Right.
See, I can't emphasize the power. So Patrick, when you say then, well, how does that no one is coming concept, you know, fit into this? When people do the turnaround with it, right? Instead of seeing it as a negative, like, oh my God, you know, I'm in this alone, and see it as, no, this is, I have the ability to mobilize resources within me and even around me to my benefit. That's the empowerment that takes place.
Yeah.
It's when people start to really thrive and people see that, because so much of recovery has been just about letting go.
Yeah.
And that's important. I'm not in any way ever going to minimize the importance of doing that. But it's also about getting hold of some things that right. you can control and deal with.
And yeah. you know, Alan, the other thing is it just as we're talking about this, one of the main things you and I talk about with people all the time is we're not going to get rid of anything. It's like, and that's one of the biggest things I've learned in my personal life and other people's life is we waste so much time thinking we can get rid of these parts. I want to get rid of my alcoholism. I want to get rid of my should monster. I want, you know, it's like, no, because this is another part of that. And it's like, it's the way you said it too, Melanie, is the, it's good news, bad news, or bad news, then good news. It's like, you know, what we say when I begin embracing fear by saying, you know, I got bad news. You can't get rid of the fear. The good news is you don't have to, you know, right. we're just going to yeah. change your relationship with it. And what you just said is like, yeah, you got like, no, this is the big, actually the so-called bad news is the beginning of the good news.
Yeah. I think also the thing to remember is becoming, you know, Alan and I have talked about post-traumatic growth and post-traumatic rebound and how, when we transition from victim to survivor, the options are unlimited, what we can do. And I firmly believe people are capable of doing so much more than they realize. And taking those small steps, once they get into recovery, that progress leads them to greater things that they didn't even know were possible.
Well, we got to have a first row seat in that when I was out at Divided Sky, and in the afternoon, you know, I don't lecture, I just invite people to come up and do some work. And some of the work that took place that afternoon was the way that one of the guests I invited to come and join us that day, she described it as, in her whole life, the only time she experienced such a powerful example of humanity is when she gave birth to her child, and she saw what was happening that day at Divided Sky as a just an outpouring of love and humanity, especially with that young man that was up there that was terribly shy, right, and struggled with it his whole life. And then when I invited people to come up and say something to him, the line just kept growing.
It was great.
Wasn't it remarkable? I mean, it was such a healing moment for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
and that's the example, is that, see, is when we treat people as though they're stuck, they're not sick, it's a whole different orientation.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And that's what you're doing. I love it, Melanie. I really do.
The gift to us as staff here is we get to see people like evolve, even, you know, if they have a 30-day stay, which we extend stays a lot, and the individual you were talking about is extending his stay. He's not, you know, he's not feeling like I'm set to go out in the world quite yet. Can I stay longer? And that's the beauty of what we do, is we can extend people's stay regardless, you know, insurance doesn't matter here. Mm-hmm. But really looking at them, seeing the growth, we get to see the growth. We get to see them kind of come out of what they thought they were about when they got here, and seeing bits and pieces of their true self come to the surface, which is great.
So cool, isn't it? Yes, it really is. It's a great, great atmosphere and climate that you create for people to grow.
Thank you. Thank you.
Since we last spoke, which was more than a year ago, like how has Divided Sky grown, or like what have been, what's been both the challenges and then also the catharsis?
It's like challenges are just growth to me. We opened with nobody really had opened a program like this before. As far as anyone on staff had never done this before. So we had ideas, and this is what we're going to think is going to happen. And then when you get into the, you know, daily schedule and how it works, and, you know, we just got rid of the stuff that wasn't working, which was kind of easy because there was no argument about it. It was just, this isn't going to work. Let's get rid of this. Let's try something new. So there've been a lot of changes. The growth is just hearing the feedback from the guests in a way that's meaningful. And so right now we have two intakes today, which will, I believe, fill our male beds. So we've got at least 32 people here, which, you know, for a while when we first opened, there were like four people.
30 is healthy. 30 sounds good.
And yeah. And the beautiful thing to us is that our intake coordinator does such a good job that everyone who comes in wants to get sober. Like, they're motivated to embrace what we're providing and offering and internalizing it and put it into action. And that's just fantastic. One of the cool things too is just when we do the emotional sobriety 101, part of that includes really describing what it means to take things personally. And I think most of the people that come in the door have no understanding of what that means. And it's a freedom when we explain it in the way we do, which is, it's not, you're thinking about things in a way that's not reality. You're thinking that everyone thinks the way you think, and you have a belief that everyone's, you know, going through their lives with you as the main character, and that's not the case.
Right.
So that was a freedom for me personally. And again, you know, we see people go, oh man, okay, now I get it. It is rather egotistical, and it's generally people with lower self-esteem. So taking that out of the equation is really freedom for them.
Can you describe a little bit what the program is at the foundation?
So it's operated as a residential recovery retreat. So it's outlined, like, it looks like a rehab from our schedule, from our outline. And everyone here, you know, we're self-pay, which is, it's $7,500 a month, which is a really good deal. We also have a lot of scholarship opportunities. We just started the Women's Scholarship Fund, which means we're trying to raise $500,000 by December 31st.
By the way, I'll just say that is a great deal.
Yeah. It is. $7,500 is a great deal. But women have, you know, different needs as far as recovery goes, and they also have more obstacles. So the Women's Scholarship Fund is outlined and designed specifically so that we can help more women. And we've been doing pretty good with that so far. So, you know, the thing that we can do is extend people. As I've said, there's no insurance that will say you have to be, you know, cut off at a certain date. So we start with a 30-day program. The schedule is from 6:30 in the morning right up until 10 o'clock at night. And I'm just looking through Monday, you know, they do breakfast, they get medications. We do an RA, which recovery assistant morning motivational, which is a quick 20-minute whatever group before we get into big book study. There's always outside time here. That's really important. I don't care that it's Vermont. I don't care that it's February. Bundle up, get outside. We have skis, we have snowshoes, we have all of that. We know exercise, fresh air, sunlight helps people. It helps to alleviate the symptoms of depression. Whether they realize that or not when they come in, we drag them outside enough that hopefully they get a glimpse of that. So the Monday outside time lunch, and then Essential Insights is an hour and a half. Then we have a group called Musicking and Making Stuff. So our program manager, Ross, is an ethnomusicologist. So he does a lot of the music groups that we offer. Personal time, dinner, And then Monday nights we have an AA meeting. They all do 10th step at 9 o'clock, and then that's just one day.
I'll always remember doing the 10th step when I was in rehab, and that was great, actually. They get immediately getting us into the habit of accounting for our behavior, you know, the day.
And that is guests. They run that, so there's no staff involved with that. They have their snack at night, and then they do that together as a group to kind of allow them. We want them to also have a lot of time that's not necessarily overseen by staff, but within reason.
In treatment, anyway, they don't need us nearly as much as we like to think.
Yeah. And they also talk about emotional sobriety. We have a core concept of the day that goes up on the board so that they're reminded throughout the day. And the coolest thing, which Alan, I don't think we told you this. So we have an alumni Facebook page, and they started to ask if we could put the core concept of the day on the alumni Facebook page. Like, they still want to be involved with reminders of what we need to pay attention to.
The way that the staff came in when I was doing some of the work, I'm thinking of Steve specifically. He came in with such nuanced and great points.
Yeah.
That I can see that as they're working with it, their relationship to the material is really, really maturing.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's maturing, it's deepening, it's getting more focused. It's a wonderful thing to observe that.
It's really the fun thing also is that we all make fun of ourselves all the time. So we're all like joking about it. That's just one of my unenforceable rules, but I still want it to be my way because that's the way I want it. Like, we all understand each other in that capacity, but we don't take ourselves too seriously.
You know, I heard that in a meeting the other day. Somebody was just blunt about it. It was actually Bill Cleveland, who we've had on the show before, and he was saying that's actually the most important thing in the rooms is to not take yourself too seriously. It was like so much air went out of, like, you know, in a good way, air went out of the room when he said that, because we're all trying to save our lives and trying to save each other, but if you can inject a little levity into those proceedings, I feel like a lot more becomes possible.
One of the greatest things too is here, my office is right next to one of the group rooms, and every single day, there's always like, all of a sudden I hear everyone laughing hysterically. Like, that just brings me joy to hear that.
How involved is Trey? You know, you talk a lot about Trey Anastasio, right? From Fish.
Yep. My previous job was working for the New York State court system. I was there for 17 years. And in December of 2005, I believe it was, he was driving through the county where I worked. Trey was driving through the county that I worked. I believe it was like 1 in the morning, driving. He was pulled over for driving erratically, and there was found to have lots of substances in the car that were not prescribed to him, that were not legal, all of the stuff that goes along with addiction. So he ended up on my caseload. I wouldn't have known one Fish song at that time. I didn't know anything about the scene. I didn't know anything about the band, which was good because I shouldn't have. It would have probably had an effect on what happened next. But he came into the program, and I just saw him as a guy struggling really heavily with addiction and trying to navigate working out his friends, his family, like, you know, what was next for him. He did great in the program. He finished it in, you know, I think like 14 months. And after that, we were asked to go speak at it's down in DC. We were asked to go talk about drug courts. So we did that. And then as time went on, our relationship kind of evolved into a friendship. I was thinking the other day that we've almost known each other for 20 years. And I've been able to see him, you know, thrive in recovery in a way that's just amazing. It's exciting to be a part of that. We got to a certain point where he's been sober a while, and he was kind of saying, you know, what more can I do? I sponsor people and I work a good program, but I feel like I should be doing more. And on my side, I referred people to treatment all the time in my previous job. And sometimes the treatment programs aren't great. And sometimes people will come back and I would ask what they liked or didn't like. And it wasn't necessarily about the people. It was about, you know, the insurance and the coverage and the money. And that was too bad, in my opinion. And I felt as though there was a time where we were good with the programs that we were referring people to, and they did amazing work, but it didn't feel quite as strong in that direction anymore. So what I said to him was, let's do a program. Like, why don't we do something? And it was kind of tongue in cheek. And I was kind of like, when we do a rehab, we're going to do blah, blah, blah. One of my friends happened to have found this abandoned hospital near where she lives in New York. So we were looking at these pictures and talking about that. That didn't work out. But, you know, the reality is we just both said, oh, okay, how would we do this? And that's how we got to where we are. A lot of work. The pandemic was hard because we couldn't get things approved to move forward with the treatment modality that we originally wanted, which worked out to be for the best anyway. So we spent a lot of time during the downtime during the pandemic, really kind of trying to juggle all, as well as the buying the building. You know, it's a big building, and working through that was overcoming many, many obstacles. I mean, that's the thing that where emotional sobriety came in really handy. So yeah, he knows exactly what goes on as far as the groups and the understanding of where our core is 12 step, and that's we all embrace that. So he knows what the groups are, he understands it, and he's thrilled. He loves the Women's Scholarship Fund. Like, that's something he's really super supportive of.
So what are some of your ambitions going forward? Where would you like to take it?
I think, you know, we need sober living. We need a women's facility, a separate women's facility. Those are just long-term, love to do it kind of thing. Sober living is tough. You know, Vermont has a pretty high population of homelessness. So I think we're fourth in the country. So when we bring people in who, you know, came from somebody's couch, we need to send them somewhere that's safe and supportive. So there is sober living here, but we could use more. So that's one option. Having women in a separate facility, I think, would be, it's just something that will help empower them more to not have, it's, you know, any program you're at, majority is going to be male, and that's immediately intimidating for some women.
Recovery is something you can't give somebody. They've got to, there's got to be this wellspring inside of them that reaches for it or is like, kind of eyes open to see. But I don't know. Is anything that you've thought of recently about how we could share the gift of recovery or, maybe getting to more to the fundamentals? Like, been struggling with some people lately. And obviously, and every time, and as I struggle, I'm remembering how insane I was. At the end, and how many people were trying to help me, and the gears were just not moving. They'd completely ossified, but then somehow it worked, and then everything, all the wisdom, all the help came flooding in, and I was just grabbing with both hands. But is there any instances you can share with us where you've really been able to affect that in some meaningful way?
There's two things that came to my mind. One is live the example. Being the person that we are as sober, healthy people is a great example of what recovery looks like and what it can look like. To me, that's priceless. And the other thing that I run the family group here also. We have an online family group, and we can't talk anyone into recovery. It's not like a, hey, this is what's next. You know,
You don't sell it, yeah.
we don't sell it. And people come in, they're not necessarily in a state of denial anymore. And that's why we're able to operate the way we do is we're not talking anyone into, we're not saying you are an addict or you are an alcoholic. We're assuming that they know that, and that's why they're here. And then we kind of push it forward to this is what might benefit you. Like, these emotional sobriety concepts are things for you to discover for yourself, for you to internalize and think about. The key is that they're not aware of them. So you
Well,
can't change what you're not
no,
aware of.
I love what you're saying, because I've worked over the years. I've worked with so many people coming out of programs, and some very, very well-known programs. It's the whole power struggle thing that still exists inside treatment programs. You're an addict. I'm not. You are too. I am not. Are too. It's like, I mean, it's like so much time is wasted with that. And talk about taking it personally. This is where we're talking about the staff taking it personally. They people get dug in their opinions. I always remember what I heard Richard Bandler say one time, which was, there's no such thing as resistant clients. There are only inflexible therapists. And it's like, and that's when I'm listening to you, I'm realizing, you go like, no, you're skipping that part. It's like, and it's like, we all have to deal with denial, because what we do is we help people with denial. If you're gonna do therapy with me, you're gonna help me with my denial, because I can't see my own denial. So it's like, and it's not gonna be, and again, you're not gonna sell that to me. It's like, you're not gonna strap me down and force me to understand it. It's like, you're gonna give me that opportunity, and that's what I hear you doing. I mean, as corny as it, or as lightweight as it sounds, it's like you do what I feel like Alan and I've talked about before, what I feel like I do for a living, have done for 40 years. It's a really good job. It's like, I just talk to people. I visit with people for a living. It's like, and then they pay you. It's like, it's a good job. But it's like, what we're doing is we're having helpful conversations with people. And it's like, and everybody gets to take what they want to take, or what they can take from it. It's not up to me. It's not up to you. Not up not to Patrick.
We're not fixing anybody. We're helping them
No.
to see some options that may work for them. And we're helping them to see behaviors that they may have exhibited that stem from something else. We're not going to blame anybody. We're going to say this might be because of this. But if you want to change that, here's how that might happen.
Humans are just weird, and it's nice when we can get a bunch of people together who want to be better, and that's what you're talking about, people who want to be better.
When you describe it, Divided Sky as a retreat, I think that that's helpful, because yeah, it's just a different sensibility. And I there's a retreat I attend every December out here, and I've come to depend on it. It's like a real pressure valve for all the stuff.
We also offer a recovery recharge week-long experience for people that are in sustained recovery.
That's good.
So if somebody has been sober for a while, we're not going to do aftercare. We're not going to do, they've already sustained their recovery for a while and they have a good foundation. That's where we can bring them in. And then we do a lot of emotional sobriety with them, because that's the stuff that they say, and what we hear the most is that's what's been missing.
I might be checking in one of these days.
That please do anytime. If you want to take a trip across the country, please feel free, and we will hook you up. We've got a pretty healthy kitchen too. Like this, it is holistic. Like we have the kitchen, the food we serve is, there's no soda, there's no fried food. It's fairly healthy, but we do have an amazing baker who does a fantastic job with the sweets.
Good.
I love what you guys are doing. And if to direct our listeners to more information, best to probably just include the website, or is what is your preference?
DividedSky.org. And we did a good job with the website explaining every single thing, because it is confusing when people don't know we're not treatment. So we outline everything in there that we are. And if somebody needs detox first, that's where we will help them get and then come in. Or sometimes people do it inpatient residential treatment program first and then come in also, which the more abstinence before coming here, the better. That's the way we look at it.
Yeah, right on. Well, thank you so much for coming back and talking with
Yes.
us again, Melanie.
Great to be here, Tom. Nice to meet you too.
Very nice to meet you.